Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi. And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 27th, 2016. Can you believe it? Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, D.R. Well, D.R., we continue to try and figure out how to respond to the unhappy events of this election season. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is pretty clear is that it's unlikely that the Trump-Putin administration is going to be very enthusiastic about any kind of climate action. And so mm-hmm. the energy and the focus of work will shift to the local governments. Mm-hmm. But it's just a reminder. There's a reminder here. I'll put up a link from a guy named Farber at Legal Planet, who points out that this is the fourth time that the conservative GOP has tried to destroy the EPA. Mm-hmm. Right? They've had multiple attempts to do this, starting back with Ronald Reagan in 1980. Right, mm-hmm. And each time they have been beaten back. Right, through a combination of ferocious public resistance and legal cases, and our current circumstance is much worse than it has been in the previous three times, but still, in all, mm-hmm. we should hope that with enough activism, people writing letters, people calling their congressmen, we may be able to blunt some of the craziness. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you see any of that, D.R.?
Yes. The only quibble I had with Dan Farber's piece was that he didn't note what the origin of this anti-environmental push was. And the origin, in a very real sense, was the 1976 Buckley versus the Beleo ruling that said that money is a form of free speech. And the 1978 Bilotti versus First National Bank of Boston Supreme Court ruling that said that private entities are the equivalent of people and have civil and have First Amendment protections. It was in from there that you started seeing the political right, which, you know, used to work in a bipartisan fashion on environmental protection, become radically anti-environment. And there you had, and in from there you had Ronald Reagan running around, you know, saying that trees were causing more pollution than automobiles. You had the anti-regulatory zealots that he appointed to EPA and Interior. In from there you had the Newt Gingrich's attempt to to destroy all vestiges of investment in clean energy. And from there you had George W. Bush and all the malevolence he did on this issue. And what Trump is doing is simply the next generation of that. I mean, it's like this effort to attack environmental protection, they come out as frequently as iPhones, it seems. As Dan Farber notes, it has been resisted by a combination of citizen activism and just general disgust, because people like clean air, people like clean water, they like having a stable atmosphere, and they just don't go for this sort of, you know, Ayn Randian vision of the world, which appeals really only to people who thought The Fountainhead was a good book.
Well, I think that, yeah, that's the one where the guy pulls his own building down at the end and blows his own building up. Is that
I think so. I think so.
I remember reading that saying, I read it about the same time, same age as Paul Ryan, and I read it saying, what a stupid book. So you're right. The Farber piece says this has been tried before. It could always succeed this time, but we have some methods at hand. I guess the other important thing to keep in mind is that local government, which is to say the state and localities, the city and town that you live in, are also now very important places for climate activism to actually mm-hmm. take hold. It may even be more important in many respects than the federal government. That local mm-hmm. here in Massachusetts, we have the Global Warming Solutions Act. Over in California, they just passed a cap and trade, and the Governor Brown of California is ready to put up his own satellites if the mm-hmm. federal government backs out. I've seen reports that there cities in states across the nation in this election where Mr. Trump Putin got elected, states passed referenda in support of clean energy. I mean, it's mm-hmm. quite a remarkable local effort, and that's where climate activism will be focused over the next few years, and that's good because that's much closer. Your state and local government are much more accessible to most people than is the federal government, which, of course, mm-hmm. is way, way off in the big city, right?
As Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local. And I think Dan Farber also, or one of his colleagues at Legal Planet, noted the otherwise right-wing mayor of a town of a city in Florida who, after a I think this is the story, was that an octopus washed up during one of those king tides. And he basically said, we have to deal with the octopus in the room. And the Legal Planet blog noted that, you know, on a local level, whatever one's party affiliation is, one doesn't have the luxury of declaring science to be a hoax and ignoring climate change. So again, the closer you are to the ground, the more, you know, politicians will be forced to respond to demands for clean energy and reduced pollution.
And that's a great opportunity for people who care about climate issues, some of whom listen to this podcast. I mean, this is a time to actually make your voice heard, which is easier than you think, right? To support these efforts. Let me just backtrack for a minute back to the federal government thing, because it is a question it does raise a question of things that people can actually do to support a good climate agenda. So it turns out that Massachusetts federal senator, U.S. Senator Ed Markey, right, is one of the senators that will be interviewing Rex Tillerson of the former ExxonMobil CEO, who is now going to be our Secretary of State, or so the claim is. And Markey is claiming that he is going to battle all of these bad nominations, right? Dion, did you see anything about that?
Yes, he's vowing to basically go toe-to-toe with regard to specifically the nominations of Tillerson, Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, Scott Pruitt as EPA Administrator, and Rick Perry as head of the Department of Energy. And basically, even though the prospects of stopping these nominations from passing the Senate, even though those prospects are limited, certainly Markey and others can cast a harsh spotlight on the radical views of all three individuals. It'll be interesting to see how they squirm after all the years and years we've seen, you know, right-wing senators trying to make, appointees who respect science, trying to make them sort of, you know, wilt under the spotlight. Now it'll be interesting to see the tables turn.
Well, and I guess the reason I wanted to go back to the Markey and the issue at the federal level is because this is a very simple action that any one of us can take. Certainly, if you're in Massachusetts, he's your senator. I mean, go to the guy's website. There's a contact page. Scroll through it. He's going to ask you some questions about, you know, your name, rank, and serial number. But write a one-sentence email that says, I support your effort to protect the global warming and stopping Mr. Tillerson. Boom, send the letter, right? That's a climate action. That is a thing that you can do. And trust me, it makes you feel better. I mean, I think many climate hawks are sort of close to despair. Well, you shouldn't be. Take action. It makes you feel much better. And here's a simple thing that requires only an email to Ed Markey. You're telling him something nice, that you support him. What could be easier than that? But it gets you started. So there's that. Markey, send him a note telling him that you support what he's trying to do. I guess the other thing, speaking of local governments and things that you can do, is that here in Massachusetts, there's a long backstory here as well, but last summer, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court issued a ruling saying that the executive branch of the Massachusetts state government was required by law to meet the carbon dioxide emission reductions that were mandated in the Global Warming Solutions Act. That it wasn't just an aspiration that they would try and fail and nobly fail. No, they had to meet it by law. So it turns out that the Baker administration has taken this to heart. They are proposing regulations that allow us to get to the targeted carbon reduction emissions by the year 2020. Right? You have to read out, there's a lot of moving parts there, right? But regulations to help us achieve the goal of carbon reductions that we set for ourselves. There are going to be hearings on that come February. So here's a chance, again, for people to learn about the issue, send a letter to the governor saying either you support what he's doing or there are ways that it could be improved. But it's a way that at the local level here in Massachusetts, you can participate in fighting back against this horrific anti-climate national agenda, that we can make our state do the right thing. Did you see any of that, DR?
Yes, and the hearings are, as you know, scheduled for February. And it is going to be interesting from two perspectives. Number one, it will be interesting to see if those who attend the hearings will ask members of the Department of Environmental Protection what they plan to do, not just to reduce emissions, but to try to get the state in terms of its purchases, in terms of what it does, to sort of move as aggressively as possible away from any dependence on fossil fuel to go completely clean. And number two, it's interesting in the context of a discussion that Tom Hartman had on his program on the RT network with Terry Tamminen, who used to be an aide to Al Gore and then went on to become the head of the California Department of Environmental Protection under Arnold Schwarzenegger. And in that interview, he talked about the stuff that Schwarzenegger did on a state level, in contrast with the agenda, energy agenda of George W. Bush to ramp down carbon pollution, to sort of move the state off fossil fuel. So again, when you have federal inaction, that's when you can have a ramping up of state and local action, as has been noted. Look at during the Bush years, how many coal-fired power plants were shut down due to the Beyond Coal campaign that Michael Bloomberg was involved with. And there was just this sort of, you know, on the ground state and local action, what we talked about, you know, if Peter Sinclair, local, vocal, and never back down. And again, putting pressure on officials to realize that on a local level, on a state level, on a grassroots level, you don't have the luxury to sound like Trump or to do what Trump is doing on the climate issue. You have to respond. You have to pursue clean energy. You have to reduce emissions, and you have to act to protect future generations. You don't have a choice to do otherwise.
And let me say that when we say put pressure on elected officials, certainly at the state level, that means something as simple as calling the state house. I mean, there's a publicly available comment line, right? If you go to wheredoivote.ma.gov, I mean, it'll tell you who your state rep is with his phone number, and it's very simple. You call him up and tell him what you think. I mean, this is an important thing going forward, that people know how to express themselves. And believe me, no state rep is going to embarrass you or yell at you over the telephone. They want to hear what you have to say. They're going to be very polite. If you're polite, just tell them what you know your issue, that you like solar power or you want these regulations to go through. They're going to say thank you very much. And again, it makes you feel better. It's activism. Mm-hmm. It's the way to apply that pressure that you were so adamant about just now, dear. Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
So. Let me just say this in passing. I hope we can return to it before the end of the podcast. But there are two other things that people can do, right? One is that on January 21st, coming up in a few weeks, just after the inauguration day or opening day, as Mr. Orangeheads calls it, on the 21st on Boston Common, there will be a protest to cover all kinds of opposition to the Trumpian agenda. So you can look that up, take the T-ride into Boston, wear gloves and a nice warm hat, and you'll have a great day. The other thing that's coming up is that Mass Power Forward is having a lobbying day on the State House, at the State House on, I think it's a Wednesday, right? This is a great time. I mean, lobbying your state representative is fun. I mean, people are intimidated by it, but it's fun. You go, the organizers will tell you what to say, where to go, how to present the information, And it's a good deal. You get to go talk to your state rep and tell them what you think in person. It's incredibly important. If you have the time, that's another good thing to do. So those are actions you can take.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, DR, there's one other question. Just to shift ourselves off a little bit. Let's talk about climate scientists who have been harassed by the right-wing media, in particular mm-hmm. a guy named Michael Mann, who has been very influential in providing data that shows climate change is real. It's a long backstory, but let's see. A magazine called the New Republic? No.
National Review.
The National Review, a conservative magazine called National Review, essentially insulted him and libeled him. I forget exactly what they compared him to, Jerry Sandusky or some kind of crazy thing. Mm-hmm. Michael Mann sued the magazine, right? Mm-hmm. As sort of this defensive, you know, the best defense is a good offense kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That has dragged on in court for a long time. So tell me, DR, what is the latest turn of the screw of the Michael Mann story?
Well, in addition to National Review, Michael Mann sued the Competitive Enterprise Institute as well. And the District of Columbia Court of Appeals, it's the State District of Columbia Court of Appeals, not the federal court, has ruled that his case can go forward specifically against Rand Simberg of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and Mark Stein of National Review, Rich Lowry of National Review, who was another defendant, has been dropped as a defendant because I guess the court decided that he was that what he did was not as severe egregious. as what Simberg and Stein did.
Do you have any what they did, what Simberg and Stein did or said?
Simberg was the one who basically called Mann the quote Jerry Sandusky of climate science, and Stein basically suggested that there was nothing wrong with calling him that, and that Mann had somehow committed criminal fraud in the so-called climate gate thing, despite the fact that, as the ruling itself notes, several investigations made it clear that climate gate was a nothing burger. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see if there is going to be a settlement on the part of Competitive Enterprise Institute or on the part of Stein to sort of end this over 4 years of litigation involving this, and or are these guys stubborn enough to simply not concede that what they did was wrong, you simply can't go around accusing people of fraud who have not committed fraud.
Well, and I think that the reason that it's of interest to climate hawks is that this is a case where a climate scientist who would much prefer to be in his laboratory studying tree rings or whatever exactly he does, mm-hmm. has finally tried to strike back in a legal sense at these trolls and nasty people who are trying to destroy his reputation. And he's mm-hmm. and Michael Mann, the scientist, is finally getting the legal traction to make these guys who vilified him to make them mm-hmm. somehow pay in a legal sense. So mm-hmm. God bless him. I think it's a good thing. I hope that he can extract as much financial damage from them as he can.
And you do get the sense that these guys ultimately may decide that, you know, retreat is the better part of valor, despite their, you know, apparent
braggadocio,
lack of valor.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you know, it will be interesting to see if they ultimately lose, despite the fact that their team feels empowered by Trump's election. But of course, Trump's election doesn't have an impact on this sort of litigation. And these guys never should have gone down this path. Obviously, we know about Competitive Enterprise Institute's ties to ExxonMobil. We know about the heavy advertising the fossil fuel industry puts in National Review. And it's as if what's the old saying? The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. We'll see if the arc of the legal universe bends towards justice in this case.
Well, DR, we will try and put up links to some of that stuff on the blog. Again, it's a lot going on. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog, and as I say, the links will be there. You can get to the blog through our Facebook page. It's slash massclimateaction. and link your way through to get to the blog. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or Podbean, or you can even go to old-fashioned iTunes and find us by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So, DR, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must object and stop the Trumpian agenda that's damaging America, and we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.